The Bible book of Revelation says that 3.5 times equal 1,260 days. So 7 times is double that number, or 2,520 days. In Bible prophecy, a day can represent a year. That is the case with the prophecy about the 7 times. They represent 2,520 years. Counting forward from 607 BCE, 2,520 years takes us to the year 1914, the year that the 7 times ended and Jesus began ruling from heaven as King of God's kingdom. That began a period that the Bible calls the last days. Soon, Jesus will finish gathering the rest of his co-rulers to join him in heaven. God's kingdom will then undo every problem that afflicts us and our families. Imagine living there under the rulership of a king who really cares about you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pilgrim Devotion. I'm your host, Pastor Michael Howard, the senior pastor of Seaford Baptist Church. This is a podcast for anyone inside or outside of Seaford Baptist Church who is living the pilgrim life, representing the kingdom of God in the kingdom of man. And what you just heard is an excerpt of a video from JW.org, the official website of the Jehovah's Witnesses, and it is about their end times belief or their eschatology, the study of the end times. And that is exactly what we're going to be talking about on today's episode, the eschatological beliefs of the Jehovah's Witnesses. And I felt like it would be appropriate for us to do this in conjunction with a new series that we are starting here at Seaford Baptist, a new midweek series called Confronting Cults and Counterfeits. And in that series, we are going to be specifically dealing with those cults, and I use that term cult not to be derogatory, not as a term of mockery. I use that term cult because we're talking about people who have broken away from historical, orthodox, biblical, faithful Christianity. And when you talk about the Webster's Dictionary definition of a cult, it's people who are breaking away from what is orthodox. And so we are talking about cults that have shot out of Christianity into apostasy, and one of those would be Jehovah's Witnesses. In the series, we'll talk about Jehovah's Witnesses, we'll talk about Mormons, talk about Christian Science, Christian Scientists. We will also talk about and that is like the religion of Christian Science, not like Christians who like science, right? We also will be talking about Satanic Temple, New Age spirituality. In the case of the Satanic Temple, not so much an apostate offshoot of Christianity, but a direct opposition to Christianity. And then, just for the fun of it, we're gonna be touching on some Scientology at the end. So, I wouldn't say a direct offshoot of Christianity. I wouldn't say it's directly an apostate Christian cult, but I will say it's going to be a lot of fun to learn what Tom Cruise believes, so we're going to do that toward the end of the summer. But in conjunction with that series starting, I wanted to talk about the eschatology of Jehovah's Witnesses, and I feel like if you really want to go at the false belief system of the Watchtower organization, eschatology is actually a great place to start, because in truth, the entire movement of the Watchtower and Jehovah's Witnesses, the entire movement of this organization really started as an end times cult. And I'll get to that as I talk about the history of it here in just a moment. But it started as an end times cult with Charles Taze Russell. And so if you go at their eschatology and you prove it to be, or show it to be, or expose it to be faulty, then you're really eroding the very foundation of this belief system, because it started as an end times cult. It was the main thrust of it. And I also think that when you just see like how many times they've changed their teachings surrounding their beliefs regarding the end of the world, how many times their teachers and their so-called prophets have changed their teachings, then it exposes those that have led the organization as being false teachers, false prophets, and it exposes the fraudulent and counterfeit teachings of the entire belief system, the entire organization. And there's a lot you could talk about, right? I mean, we could talk about their beliefs about the divinity of Christ and how they say that Christ is not God in the flesh and that he resurrected as a spirit and that he is a God but a lesser God. I've lovingly argued with Jehovah's Witnesses I've had the pleasure of meeting that they are polytheists and they deny that, but I absolutely believe they are. You could talk about their denial of the Trinity, about their beliefs about the Holy Spirit not being the third person of the Trinity, but being an impersonal force or energy that emanates from God. We could talk about the New World Translation and the inconsistencies in it, some of which are glaringly obvious on their own website when their English translation does not match up at all with their Greek interlinear that they have posted on their own website. And you can go to like Colossians 1, 16 and 17 and see that the word other has been added in. We can talk about their system of salvation and how they say that it's salvation by grace, but it's really not, because if you do not knock on doors, if you do not go to the Kingdom Hall, if you do not study the New World Translation and follow the teachings of the organization, then you can lose your salvation. So it's not by grace at all. It is actually a veneer of salvation by grace language, but when you look underneath that veneer, when you look under the hood of that car, what you find is some good old works righteousness. And, you know, we could talk about their conspiracy that the name Jehovah is the one true name of God and has been removed from the Bible by all these Bible translators, and that the New World Translation of the Bible is the only true translation of the Bible. We could get into all of that stuff, and it's all a worthwhile conversation to have, and it's good to be schooled in those things for when they come and knock on your door, especially here where we live. If you live anywhere near Yorktown, Virginia, boy, are they active here. The Jehovah's Witnesses in our area here in Hampton Roads, I guess I shouldn't speak for all of Hampton Roads, particularly for York County, where our church is located. Boy, they are more aggressive than the Mormons. I have come into contact with them much more than the Mormons. One of the biggest tourist attractions we have in our area is Yorktown Beach. And if you go down to Yorktown Beach, those folks are down there pretty much every day, as long as the weather's good, from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., trying to catch those early morning walkers who tend to be elderly. They try to go after them and convince them of their false heretical teachings. So they're quite aggressive. So it's good to be schooled in these things so you know how to respond. But I think that if you want to, you know, like, well, where do I start? I actually think understanding their eschatology and being able to poke holes in it is a great place to start. So if we're going to have this conversation, we have to start with Charles Taze Russell in 1876 adopting the belief of some Adventist preachers that Jesus' presence had actually begun to, appear on the earth, or that it was on the earth in 1874. And then there was going to be this like time of harvest that would carry on until 1878. And by the way, this has taken quite a bit of prep for this podcast, because trying to nail down their eschatology is like trying to catch a jellyfish, you know, with your bare hands or something, right? It's like trying to nail a wet spaghetti noodle to a wall. It's very difficult, and it's difficult because they have changed so much and because some of their language is very ambiguous. And yeah, and so... some of the things I'm able to articulate better than others, I'm going to do my best as we go along. Please show grace. And I may have to stop and like correct myself a couple of times, because again, it's a lot. Like, it's really complex when an organization changes their system of belief over and over and over and over again over a period of, you know, 100 plus years. But yeah, Charles Taze Russell, the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses, started as a... what were they called? The Bible students. He believed and had people believing that Jesus' presence had begun in 1874 upon the earth, and a time of harvest would carry on until 1878, and then saints would be translated into spirit form, and it would bring about the beginning of God's favor returning to the Jews. Now, a very important verse to Charles Taze Russell and to really the entire Jehovah's Witness eschatology is Luke 21:24. They will fall by the edge of the sword, Jesus said, and be led captive among all nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles are fulfilled. I would understand that to mean, some may disagree with me, I would understand that to mean the time of the Gentiles would be the time in which the gospel is being preached to the Gentile nations, the church age. And during this age, you can look at the history of Jerusalem. It really has been trampled underfoot. And when the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled, I do believe that will be, you know, the end of the church age will be the end of this age as we know it. But Jehovah's Witnesses read that, and they believe that, like, there's going to be this time in which God's favor returns to the Jewish people. Jerusalem is no longer trampled underfoot, and that marks, well, depending on which time in their history, sometimes it marks the end, sometimes it marks the beginning of the end. We'll get into that kind of as we go. But he felt like in 1878, God's favor would return to the Jews. Nothing of note happened in 1878. Russell himself admitted this was disappointing, but he insisted, well, actually, God's favor was removed from nominal churches in 1878. And so he says this in 1881. He comes back and says, well, here's what actually happened in 1878. God took his hand off of those nominal churches completely. And then he said, during the fall of 1881, the end is going to come, though. It's going to come. And then as you get to the late 1880s and the early 1890s, his beliefs start to evolve even more. And he starts to really point to 1914 as the time in which the harvest will end in Armageddon will ensue. And so if you trace it back, 1874, that's 40 years before 1914. So he said that basically 1874 was the beginning of this harvest time where God would gather up his remnant, his faithful followers. And then in 1914, Armageddon would happen, and then the new age would begin upon an earth that is God's paradise. Russell's Studies in the Scripture series explicitly identified October of 1914 as the full end of the times of the Gentiles, referring again to Luke 21:24, and that this is the farthest that human rulership will continue, that it's going to be removed after that, and then God's people will be on the earth and that he will reign. It would be basically the beginning of Christ's millennial reign. And all of his followers, Russell said, should expect a, quote, translation of the saints that is immediate, that they would rule with the revealed Christ that year. And the Jews would return to God's favor, and the nominal church will have fallen, and the final battle between Christ and Satan will have ended, and kingdoms of the world are overthrown, and all of Christ's saints are gathered into heaven. They'll reign with them. The millennium begins. In 1894, Watchtower Magazine says, but bear in mind that the end of 1914 is not the date for the beginning, but for the end of the time of trouble. Keep that in mind, because they're going to totally contradict this in just a second. Come 1914, Russell's students are distributing their belongings to people. They're like, all right, let's give our stuff away. They're quitting their jobs. They're preparing for the end. In May of 1914, he warned his students. He said, don't lose heart. Like, don't give in to doubt. He said, quote, there is absolutely no ground for Bible students to question that the consummation of this gospel age is now even at the door. So he's saying, harvest time is ending. The end is coming. Then September rolls around, and he starts to kind of hedge his bets a little bit. And he says, well, listen, it might not happen until the spring of 1915. Even though it was really supposed to take place on September 21st, 1914, which would have been the beginning of the Jewish calendar year. Nothing happens. The Watchtower writes, quote, studying God's word, we have measured the 2,520 years, the seven symbolic times, from that year, 606 BC, and have found that it reached down to October 1914, as nearly as we were able to reckon. We did not say positively that this would be the year. Okay, so that's a lie. All right, we got to call out lies when we see them. That's a lie. If we just go back to his quote from Studies in the Scriptures, where he says that the full end of the times of the Gentiles is going to come in October of 1914, and that the followers of his teachings should expect immediate translation of the saints to rule with the revealed Christ that year. 1894, Watchtower Magazine, bear in mind, the end of 1914 is not the date for the beginning, but for the end of the time of trouble. Then Watchtower says, you know, just what, 20 years later, we did not say positively that this would be the year. It's a lie, right? It's a lie. Got to call it a lie when you see it. They say, we merely left everyone to look at the facts of history and reckon for himself. When World War I starts breaking out in 1914, Russell sees this as Armageddon. He revises his teaching to say that the time of the Gentiles ends in 1914, but the time of transition from the end of this age to the beginning of the new age would take a few years. Again, do you see how he is reinterpreting his own interpretations to fit with how things are actually developing after his so-called prophecies don't come true? Oh, well, actually, I had it just, you know, he never says I had it wrong, but what he's doing, he's just trying to reframe it as, okay, so this is actually what it's saying. Before he died in 1916, his final prediction for the end was 1918. 1918, that's when the transition will be complete and, you know, paradise will come to earth. 1919. 1918 passes, no fulfillment. So what does the organization say? Oh, well, the harvest has been gathered. There's nobody else is going to be converted. We're going to be tested for a year, and then the end will come. Still doesn't come. 1922 rolls around. They get a new leader, actually the most powerful leader in the organization's history. It's not Charles Taze Russell. He's the founder, but the most powerful leader in the history of the organization is Judge Rutherford, Judge Joseph Rutherford. He says, well, in 1918, that year that Russell talked about, what actually happened is Christ entered the temple to judge. And it's under Rutherford's leadership that the doctrine of the church becomes that the end will come before the generation of 1914 passes away. So you see how, again, things are being reframed. And so basically what they say is anybody who was 15 years old, like before all of the people who were at least 15 years old die, this is going to happen. The end of the age is going to come. So 1914, Jesus returns invisibly, if you will. And then he's going to, you know, set up the new age. And those who follow the teachings of Russell and Rutherford, they will reign with him. That's going to happen. And it's going to happen before the people who were at least 15 years old in 1914, that generation dies. Okay, so that's what they start to teach. 1925, a new teaching comes about from Rutherford. He's the movement's chief theologian, and he has this little booklet in 1920. It's called Millions Now Living Will Never Die, because, hey, all those people from 1914, they will not pass away before the end times are completed. Rutherford also writes in that booklet that the faithful ones of old, meaning the patriarchs and the prophets of the Old Testament from ancient times, they're going to be resurrected to earthly life in 1925. So there's this new teaching, and everybody's waiting for 1925 because the prophets and the patriarchs, like Abraham and Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Isaac, they're all going to resurrect. And after their resurrection, it's like a little preview of what God has destined for everlasting life on earth. And after their resurrection, it's a sign that the harvest is almost over, right? They're like the first fruits, if you will. This prediction fails. 1925 goes by. No patriarchs resurrect. No prophets resurrect. And it's so embarrassing, the society actually makes a rule. They say no more dated future prophecies. And yet, Rutherford held strong to his conviction. In 1929, the Watchtower Society buys land in San Diego, and they build a Spanish mansion on the land for the resurrected patriarchs and prophets, who they call princes. And the mansion's called the House of Princes. And So they actually buy land and build a house for the patriarchs and prophets to live in after they resurrect. So even though it doesn't come true in 1925, they're still holding to this doctrine. Until 1948, they sell the building, and in 1950, this whole idea, this whole doctrine of the resurrection of the prophets and patriarchs is abandoned. It's a great thing to bring up with the Jehovah's Witness. You say, hey, what about that like Spanish mansion that was built in San Diego? Now, know your stuff. If you're going to go and talk to them, know your stuff. Dr. James White, who I think is the most prolific debater of our age, Christian debater of our age, he always says, you need to know what the opposition is saying. You need to know it well. So know your stuff. Don't just go in there, oh, didn't you like build a house or something in 1948? No, it was built in 19, or it was, the land was bought in 1929. Spanish mansion was built on it. It remained there for about 20 years until they sell it in 1948. And then they just delete the doctrine in 1950. So you can see how doctrines come and doctrines go, right? And as long as the people at the top can reframe it well, no problem. There's a rhythm here. 1966, Jehovah's Witnesses start to teach that a significant event is going to occur in 1975. Now, what they do is they heavily imply that it's going to be the end, but they don't say it outright. And they're basing this on this idea of that generation of 1914 not passing away. Because, you know, those people were getting older now. They're getting up into their 60s, 70s, 80s. It's like, you know, it's supposed to happen soon. So they say 1975, there's going to be a significant event. Speakers at the conventions from 66 leading up to 1975 have this little phrase they're saying, stay alive till 75. Well, 1975 comes and goes. And again, just like in 1925, just like in 1920, just like in 1918, right? Just like in 1914, just like in 1878, just like in 1881, nothing happens. And this time, it's pretty damaging. Their growth rate falls from 6% a year to 2%. People leave the organization. They actually purge a bunch of leaders from the organization. And it's a pretty disastrous scene. And yet they keep going. 1984, the end will come by the year 2000, but likely before, because hey, this generation from 1914, they're getting pretty old now. Don't have that many of them left, right? Millions now living will never die, Rutherford said in his 1920 booklet. And yet, here we are. They're all kind of dying. So they say it's got to happen before the turn of the century. 1995 rolls around. It's not looking so good, right? I mean, at this point, a lot of these people have passed away. And so they release an issue of Awake magazine and they change the heading. So Awake magazine used to say, this magazine builds confidence in the Creator's promise of a peaceful and secure new world before the generation that saw the events of 1914 passes away. I mean, that is articulating the teachings of Judge Joseph Rutherford. Well, in 1995, October 22, 1995, that's the last time that that is the heading of Awake magazine. They change it and they start just using language saying that it's a magazine talking about the imminent events that are going to happen in the end times. It's imminent. Stop talking about this generation stuff so much. And in 2008, they just get rid of that generation stuff altogether. And they just start saying, anointed believers will be on the earth when the end comes. So no more generation language. They'll just say anointed believers. And then in 2010, this new teaching arises, which I suppose I'd have to ask some of my Jehovah's Witness friends that I've gotten to know in the area, but it seems to be the doctrine they hold to now, that the generation that overlaps with the generation of 1914, that generation starts to get emphasized. So any anointed ones, anointed believers, quote unquote, who believed up until 1992 would be alive when the end comes. So now you've really stretched that timeline out. It was going to be anybody who was at least 15 in 1914 still going to be alive when the big end times event happens. Now they're saying, well, anybody who was an anointed believer who had understanding as of 1992 will be alive when the end comes, because that generation overlaps with that generation from 1914. And they can play this game on and on and on and on, right? And so You can see just how many times they have changed their doctrine on this issue. If you go to JW.org, you watch these videos, you listen to their Bible teaching, they try to make it sound like it's all succinct, it's historical, they almost make it try to seem like it's confessional in some way. But truly, it's not. It's an ever, their doctrine involving eschatology is ever evolving, and it has been since the very beginning with Charles Taze Russell. This was a very obscure end times cult, and it rose up out of that obscurity because, frankly, they're quite good at publishing their literature. They're quite aggressive with their proselytizing. And so it rose up a bit out of that obscurity, but it really is just an obscure end times cult. I think about Harold Camping. You guys remember that guy? He like calculated like Jewish feast days and then the lunar calendar and the Gregorian calendar, and he put it all together. And he said, first of all, he said that like Jesus was coming back in 1994. In 1992, he wrote a book called 1994. May 21st, 2011 was then the date that he threw out there. And then May 21st, 2011, it doesn't happen. He goes on TV like 2 days later, May 23rd, 2011. He says, well, actually, a spiritual judgment did occur 2 days ago. And then he says, and on October 21st, 2011, that's really when Jesus will return physically. And then that doesn't happen. And so he just disappeared into seclusion, not to be heard of again, and then died not too long after that. And there's not a lot of difference between Charles Taze Russell and Harold Camping, other than Russell was better at PR. He was better at getting his stuff out there. He was better at making money off of it. And then he was followed by a guy in Rutherford who was even better than Russell at those things. They're not the only ones, though, in terms of these kind of larger apostate Christian cults. He's not the only one. Joseph Smith, he famously believed there was going to be a 56-year windup. He wrote that in his lifetime, you know, this stuff's pretty much going to be over in about 56 years. And of course, that didn't happen either. And these sorts of false prophecies regarding the end are a hallmark of false teachers, truly. And Jesus' words should be taken into account. So I'm going to get my Bible out here and I'm going to read you a couple of passages. Probably should have my Bible open ahead of time, so if you bear with me one moment. So you go to Matthew chapter 24, Jesus' Olivet Discourse. Now, my understanding of the Olivet Discourse is that Jesus is going back and forth and talking about the end of the world and the siege and destruction of Jerusalem that's going to come in 70 AD. And I think he's talking about them kind of in one breath because the siege and destruction of Jerusalem is a snapshot. It's a preview of what is to come in the judgment of the world in the end. And if you go and you read his words there, he says in Matthew 24, 3 through 8, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, when will these things be and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And Jesus answered them, see that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and they will lead many astray. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. So when you think about the Jehovah's Witnesses, they say, well, we know it's the end times because there's war, there's famine, there's earthquakes, there's disease, there's crime, there's environmental ruin, people's attitudes are bad, you know, families are breaking down, there's a diminished love for God, there's religious hypocrisy. Well, you know, hey, we can go back all throughout the history of redemption. We can go back all throughout the history of fallen humanity, and we can see these things are present. We can see them all throughout the church age even. And so, especially as an amillennialist, I would say we see this through the cycles of history. You know what I'm saying? It's really not new. Now, do I think things are going to get particularly bad towards the end? I do. But to say that because there is war, it's the last days, you know, Jesus said, hey, you're going to hear wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. Really flies in the face of what these people teach, does it not? And then you keep on going, Matthew 24, 36 through 44, but concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark, and they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken, and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken, and one left. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake, and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. The Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Again, this runs right up against the faulty, sinking sand teaching of Charles Taze Russell, Judge Joe Rutherford, and the entire Jehovah's Witness movement and organization, the entire cult. It does. It runs right up against it. What's a clear sign of a false teacher, man? It's somebody who says they know the day and the hour. Listen, that's a pretty good sign that somebody is not taking the Lord Jesus seriously at his own words, and they are eager to twist the scriptures for their own gain somehow. And I absolutely believe that that is the case, that the men who started the movement of the Watchtower organization, started that whole Bible student movement, which became the Watchtower and eventually the Jehovah's Witnesses, which is a name given to the organization by Judge Rutherford. I think they were in it for monetary gain. I don't mind saying that, that they were absolutely in it for monetary gain. And then a lot of people, sadly, have been duped along the way and have been lied to, and they have believed those lies. And I think it's obvious that they were twisting the scriptures for their own gain when they just could look at Jesus' words in Matthew 24, where he says, don't know the day or the hour. It's going to be like the days of Noah. People are going to be living their lives, and then there's going to be judgment. People are going to be counting the Lord's promises slack, and then there's going to be judgment. They read that and they go, I think it's going to be 1878. I think it's going to be 1881. I think it's going to be 1914, 1918. Really, 1919, 1920. I think the prophets are going to be resurrected in 1925, something that's just not even biblical. It's just, some janky Bible math that Rutherford came up with and just created a doctrine that was then deleted promptly just a quarter of a century later. I look at this stuff and say, it's so clearly false teaching. And you can also really look at a pattern. Joseph Zygmunt did a good job of pointing out that there's a pattern the Watchtower Society has when it comes to these prophetic failures. He says the initial reaction by both rank and file and the movement's leaders was usually a combination of disappointment and puzzlement. Proselytism declined, so people would go, oh, this isn't true. People start to abandon the cause. But those who were faithful and are like, no, like, we're sticking in it. They maintained an attitude of watchful waiting for the predictions to materialize, the doctrinal foundations for the prophecies are re-examined, and then the leaders offer up these conjectures as to why the expected events might have been delayed. And then they'll go, oh, actually, there's a fuller realization of this prophecy that we didn't realize. And then the group asserts that the prophecies had, in fact, been partially fulfilled, but there's something greater that's going to come. There's some event of prophetic significance that's on the horizon they didn't foresee. And it's going to be supernatural, and they'll look back and say this supernatural event did occur on those dates, but there's something even better to come that's supernatural. And so then they're able to get the people who are in the movement to keep believing that God's plan is still unfolding. Unfulfilled portions of the failed prophecies are projected into the future by reissuing redated predictions. Like I said, they're redating, they're reframing, and they're reinterpreting. Never really say we failed. There's only a couple times in their history where they have actually kind of come along and been like, after 1975, they're like, ah, sorry about that. So there are a couple of times in the history there's been some apologies, but it's not often. And then the last stage of the cycle, Zygmunt says, in the last stage of the response is a selective interpretation of emerging historical events as a confirmation of the signs of the approaching end. It's what he did in 1914. Oh, well, actually, you know, I thought this was the end, but look at all this World War I stuff starting to pop up. This is actually the beginning of Armageddon, right? A pessimistic worldview keeps the people that are involved sensitized to perceive almost every social disturbance and natural disaster as a sign of the impending collapse of the earthly system, right? They're always looking in the newspaper. Oh, this is what Rutherford was talking about. This is what Russell was talking about. And they just keep this up, man. They just keep it up. They keep running back the same playbook over and over and over. And sadly, some people keep letting them score touchdowns. They're not great with dates. I don't mean to poke fun, but I have to laugh at this. Okay, so my wife got a letter from them in the mail because they did this big, you know, they don't celebrate Easter, but they did this big resurrection, memorial of Jesus's death, celebration of his resurrection, his spiritual resurrection, because they don't believe he rose bodily. So we got it in the mail, and the events were Sunday, March the 17th, at the actual Kingdom Hall in Yorktown. There was going to be a talk given about the resurrection over of Jesus's victory over death. And then there was going to be the memorial of Jesus's death on Sunday, March 24th. So that's, you know, it's Palm Sunday for us. And it was going to be actually at the Hampton Roads Convention Center. So, ooh, you know, big venue, big event. And that was March 24th. So March 17th, March 24th. We got a letter sent to us, dated by them in handwriting, March 23rd, 2024. March 23rd, 2024. Now, one of the events had already happened when they dated the letter, and if it was written by them by hand on March 23rd, 2024, and then sent out, it's postmarked March 25th, 2024, how in the world did they think that any of this was going to get to our family prior to the actual event these things happened? And I just had to laugh because I was like, this is their whole thing. They're bad with dates. You know what I'm saying? They're bad with dates. They say these dates, things are going to happen, and then they pass, and then they're still sending stuff out. So it just kind of is the way their eschatology works too, and I just had to laugh at the whole thing. Sadly laugh, because it's easy to laugh at this stuff. It's easy to find it humorous. I know. But at the end of the day, these are real people who are believing in a false Christ who cannot save them. A Christ who is not God, a Christ who is not the God-man, a Christ who cannot bear sins, bear the curse of sin on the cross. He cannot absorb the wrath of God on the behalf of believers. A Christ who does not rise again bodily. It's a completely different religion, and they deny the Trinity, and they are in danger. They are in danger of eternal punishment. They deny eternal hell, by the way. They believe in the annihilation of the soul. So it's not funny. But it's a morbid bit of laughter, I suppose, when I consider just the wrong dates on the thing they sent to us, or the late dates on the thing they sent to us, and the way that all their dates are late, right, when you consider their eschatology. So it's you can only just kind of shake your head about it. And then we should pray for them. We really should. And we should pray for the Jehovah's Witnesses. We should pray for their conversion. And again, if you live in our area here in Yorktown, you want to talk to them, make sure you know your stuff, go down to Yorktown Beach, 7 to 9. They're going to be there. They're going to be handing stuff out. And they'll talk to you. My favorite question to open up with is, so why'd you become a Jehovah's Witness? And then hear them out and let the conversation go from there. All right, Christian, how is your soul doing? I hope that it is doing well. But if it's not, you come off of Easter, come off our Resurrection Sunday celebrations, and you just feel like you are struggling, please reach out to us. Connect at seafordbaptist.com. We'd love to talk to you. How's God's grace at work in your life? How would you like for His grace to be at work in your life? You consider these questions, you want to talk to somebody, please reach out to us. And until next time. Oh, I should say, I plan to be on vacation next week. So probably not going to be an episode next week. We will be back after that. So until then, keep living the pilgrim life.